We all want to jump in and help when we see a disaster unfolding, right? You know, those images on the news, the stories of just devastating loss. It's only natural to feel like we need to donate, to do something. What if, and hear me out here, what if our good intentions could actually backfire?
It's a question more people should be asking themselves, honestly. There's this assumption that help is always good no matter what. But it's a lot more complicated than that. To be truly effective, you have to go deeper.
That's exactly what we're going to dig into today. We're using the book Bad Aid as our guide. And trust me, you might be surprised to learn just how complicated donating after a disaster can get. Especially for those of you out there who really want to make a difference, this is for you.
Absolutely. Bad Aid kind of dismantles this whole idea of pure charity. It exposes the layers of complexity within humanitarian aid. It starts by recognizing that good intentions are essential, but they're not enough.
Makes me think of that Bill Gates quote, "Giving is simple. The key is to give effectively."
Exactly right. And to give effectively, we need to understand the potential pitfalls. Like, think about the Haiti earthquake back in 2010. The world was heartbroken and everyone wanted to help. But there was so much uncoordinated aid pouring in that it actually created logistical nightmares. Sometimes it ended up hindering relief efforts instead of helping.
So how do we make sure our donations are actually helpful? Where do we even begin?
Well, the first step is understanding the different forms donations can take. Bad Aid breaks it down into four categories: knowledge, time, money, and stuff. And the key takeaway, it's about addressing real needs on the ground, not just giving what feels good to us.
I think a lot of us, me included, we have this romanticized idea of volunteering in a disaster zone. You know,
Yeah.
just drop everything, fly over there, rebuild homes, distribute food. It seems heroic almost.
That's a noble impulse for sure. But Bad Aid urges us to look beyond that romanticized image. Volunteers often face really harsh conditions, long hours, exposure to trauma, lack of even basic amenities, and that's not even considering if their skills are a good fit.
So showing up ready to work isn't always enough.
Unfortunately not. A well-meaning volunteer, but without the right training, can actually put more pressure on the professional humanitarian community. Resources get strained, people who are already stretched thin have even more to do. It can actually make things harder.
Okay, so maybe volunteering isn't always the answer. What about donating our stuff? Cleaning out those closets, sending boxes of clothes or household goods? It seems like that's always needed.
That's where things get really interesting. Donating stuff, what they call goods in kind, can be surprisingly tricky. Bad Aid highlights five key considerations if we want those donations to have a positive impact.
Five considerations. Lay it on us. What's the first one we need to be thinking about?
Appropriate technology. There's this fascinating story in the book about Radio Umwizero in Burundi. The EU funded this independent radio station, and at first it was a huge success. People loved tuning in for news, and they even had a daily soap opera that addressed local issues.
Sounds like a fantastic project. What happened?
They missed one crucial detail: batteries. See, as more and more people started listening, batteries got scarce and expensive. People simply couldn't afford to keep their radios running, so the project's impact fizzled out.
So even with all the right intentions, something as simple as battery power can derail a whole project. What's the takeaway here for our listeners?
It shows how even well-meaning technology is useless if it doesn't fit the situation on the ground. You know, you hear about high-tech medical equipment being donated to developing countries, but without trained staff, spare parts, or maintenance plans, it just becomes a really expensive paperweight.
Makes perfect sense. Donating a fancy machine is pointless if there's no way to use it. Okay, what's the next consideration?
Operational support. Donating a piece of equipment isn't enough. You've got to factor in all the ongoing costs like training, spare parts, fuel, and things like that. Bad Aid has this kind of funny story about a generator donated to a cholera treatment center in Sierra Leone.
Oh, right. This mining company donated this brand new generator, but it arrived with absolutely nothing else. No cables, no tools, not even a manual.
Exactly. They thought they were doing this great thing, but didn't think about the practical side of things. It's a classic example of ignoring operational support.
And if I remember correctly, the clinic couldn't even afford to run the generator. All that generosity went to waste.
It shows how we often assume in-kind donations are free, but that's not the reality. There are hidden costs to receiving, processing, and distributing these goods, and those costs can actually be more than just buying new stuff locally.
Okay, so far we've got appropriate technology and operational support. What's the third thing to consider when it comes to donating our stuff?
Quantity. It might seem counterintuitive, but too much of a good thing can be a bad thing when it comes to donations.
I remember Bad Aid having a pretty startling example from the Haiti earthquake to illustrate this point.
Yeah, there is a UNICEF warehouse that was completely packed with over 2 million tins of baby formula. The thing is, it wasn't even requested. It actually went against international guidelines, and there was enough to supply all of Haiti for years, by which time most of it would have expired.
2 million tins of unneeded formula. That's insane. What does this teach us about giving effectively?
It shows how important careful planning and coordination are. Donations need to match what's actually needed, not just our urge to give as much as possible. Otherwise, we risk creating logistical chaos and wasting valuable resources.
All right, so we've got appropriate technology, operational support, and quantity. What's number four on our list?
Timing. It's not just about having the right thing in the right amount, but also making sure it gets there at the right time. Think about medicine that expires before it can be used, or winter coats arriving in the middle of summer.
Right, that seems obvious when you say it like that. But in a crisis, it's easy to overlook.
Absolutely. To help effectively, you need to really understand what's happening on the ground and be able to anticipate what's going to be needed, not just react to the headlines.
So timing is key. What's the final consideration for donating our stuff?
Cost. We touched on this earlier, but it's worth repeating. A lot of people assume in-kind donations are free, but that's just not true. There are major costs associated with collecting, sorting, shipping, and distributing all these goods.
And those costs, as we discussed, can actually end up being more than just buying things locally.
Bad Aid breaks down some of the reasons for this. Sometimes you have to combine items from all different locations. There might be weird sizes and packaging to deal with, even what they call reverse logistics, having to return or destroy donations that weren't needed. It all adds up.
So before we donate our old clothes or household goods, we need to ask, are these things truly needed? And are the costs of getting them where they need to go really justified?
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
And that brings us to a case study from Bad Aid that I think will resonate with a lot of our listeners, the secondhand clothing situation.
Yeah, that's something we've all wrestled with. You know, that bag of clothes we're meaning to donate.
Bad Aid reveals some not-so-pleasant truths about where those clothes might actually end up. Did you know that in the UK alone, people throw away 10,000 pieces of clothing every 5 minutes?
10,000 items every 5 minutes. That's hard to even wrap my head around.
A lot of those clothes end up being donated after disasters. But instead of going straight to people in need, they often become part of this giant global market for secondhand clothes.
So you're saying our old t-shirts could end up being sold in a thrift store somewhere in Eastern Europe or Africa?
Exactly. And while that's not necessarily a bad thing, Bad Aid raises some concerns about the possible negative impacts. For instance, it can undercut local textile industries in developing countries. If everyone's buying cheap used clothes from the West, there's less demand for locally made goods.
That makes sense. Plus, it seems like the journey these donated clothes take is pretty murky. Are they actually helping those in need?
It's a valid question. There are often hidden costs and middlemen involved, which makes it really hard to track where the money is actually going.
And then there's the issue of whether those clothes are even appropriate. Bad Aid mentions a story from Pakistan after the earthquake in 2005 that really stuck with me.
Ah, yes. A lot of people felt that the donated clothing was culturally insensitive or just not practical. Some of it ended up being eaten by stray animals who then died because they'd ingested buttons and zippers.
Oh, that's awful. I'd never even considered that.
It shows how important it is to think about the cultural context when we donate, making sure what we're giving is both useful and respectful.
So when it comes to donating clothes, it's more than just cleaning out our closets.
Yeah.
We need to think about where those clothes are going, who will actually benefit, and whether they'll be appreciated or even appropriate at all.
Exactly right. And this leads us to another type of donation that can be problematic, drugs.
Bad Aid uses this striking term, second phase disaster, to describe what can happen when drug donations go wrong.
It's a powerful way to frame it because it highlights how good intentions can actually create a whole new set of problems. There are some pretty shocking examples in the book, like after the 1974 earthquake in Guatemala, 90% of the donated medicine couldn't be used because it was expired, already open, or the labels were in languages no one understood.
And then there's Armenia. In 1988, they received this huge shipment of medical supplies, but only a third of it was usable. The rest had to be destroyed. It's just mind-blowing.
These cases really highlight the risks of sending individually donated medications. They're often expired, the brand names aren't recognizable, and they require special ways of being disposed of.
It's pretty unsettling to think that some corporations actually exploit these situations. They donate drugs that are about to expire just so they can get a tax break and some good press.
It's cynical and, in the end, does more harm than good.
Speaking of donations going awry, Bad Aid also tells the story of a huge shipment of intravenous fluids to Iraq after the 2003 war.
Oh, that's a prime example. 3 jumbo jets filled with intravenous fluids, a major logistical operation. The problem was, no one considered that the refrigeration units in Baghdad had no electricity. And 5E fluids can't be stored above a certain temperature.
Uh-oh. What happened?
The entire shipment worth millions of dollars had to be destroyed because it had been exposed to scorching temperatures. Some of the bags had even turned green. What a waste.
So following established guidelines for drug donations is crucial, right? Like the ones from the World Health Organization.
Absolutely. The WHO guidelines say donated drugs have to be on the receiving country's list of approved medicines, have clear labels, and have a reasonable expiration date. But Bad Aid points out that these rules are often ignored, even by big organizations.
The book talks about a case in Aceh Province, Indonesia, after the tsunami in 2004. They got tons of drugs, but a huge portion of them weren't on their national list of essential medicines. The labels were in foreign languages, and a lot of them were about to expire.
And they had to destroy a big chunk of those drugs, which cost millions of dollars. It's a stark reminder that we can't just assume any drug will be helpful in an emergency.
It's a real wake-up call. We need to be informed, and we need to think things through before we donate anything. We need to make sure it's going to be truly helpful and not make things worse.
Couldn't agree more. And that leads us to a potentially even more radical idea. The idea that sometimes the best way to help might be not sending stuff at all.
Okay, that's an interesting thought. I'm sure a lot of people would find that hard to grasp.
It makes sense if you think about it. When you send physical goods, especially after a disaster, you've got this whole chain of logistics to deal with. Collecting, sorting, shipping, storing, distributing. It all takes time, money, and resources.
Yeah, and like we've been talking about, those good intentions can sometimes lead to unintended consequences, right? We could end up overwhelming local systems or even causing more harm than good.
Exactly. Bad Aid makes a strong case for donating money to reputable organizations instead. It's often just more efficient and impactful.
I could see that. Donating money gives those organizations the flexibility to buy exactly what they need right when they need it, and from local sources too.
Exactly. That way, they can avoid the whole logistical nightmare of unsolicited goods and make sure the aid actually matches what's needed on the ground.
So are you saying we should never donate stuff?
Not necessarily. There are definitely times when in-kind donations can be really helpful. It's all about being informed and strategic.
Okay, so for those of us who want to make a difference but don't want to accidentally do more harm than good, what advice does Bad Aid offer?
Bad Aid has some great guidance. First and foremost, do your research. Don't just donate to the first charity that pops up on your feed. Take some time to really investigate different organizations, look at their mission statements, what their track records are, how they operate.
Our listeners are savvy folks. They know not all charities are created equal. So look for ones that are transparent about their finances and their impact. Ones that have a solid history of actually making a difference in disaster relief.
Exactly. And don't be afraid to ask questions. Reach out to the organizations you're considering. Ask them what their specific needs are, how they handle donations, what their plans are for helping those communities.
We also have to be on guard against scams, especially after those high-profile disasters. Unfortunately, there are always people trying to take advantage of others' generosity.
That's so important. Be careful about random emails or phone calls asking for donations, and always, always verify the legitimacy of an organization before you give them any money.
Got it. So research, transparency, and caution are key when choosing where to donate.
Absolutely. And once you've found an organization you trust, think about setting up a recurring donation instead of just a one-time gift.
Is there a reason recurring is better?
It gives those organizations a predictable stream of funding so they can plan for the long term. That makes them much more effective at responding to emergencies. They have the financial stability to invest in infrastructure, training, resources, all the things that create lasting impact.
So instead of just reacting to every new crisis that pops up, we can be part of a more sustainable effort to build resilience and create lasting change.
Precisely. And remember, donating money isn't the only way to help.
Right. We talked earlier about all the different forms donation can take. Knowledge, time, and skills are all valuable.
If you have specialized skills or expertise, you can offer your services directly to organizations doing disaster relief work.
Like doctors, nurses, engineers, translators, trauma counselors.
Exactly. Your knowledge and skills could be incredibly valuable to relief efforts. And of course, if you have the time and the resources, volunteering is always a meaningful way to contribute.
But as we talked about before, it's so important to be realistic about what you can actually offer. Choose volunteer opportunities that match your skills and experience.
Right. Showing up in a disaster zone without any planning or relevant skills isn't actually helpful. Get in touch with organizations ahead of time, find out what they need, and make sure you're prepared.
And sometimes the most helpful thing we can do is just spread awareness. Talk to others about what's happening, educate them about the issues, advocate for better policies that actually support effective disaster relief.
That's such a great point. Every action we take, even seemingly small ones, can contribute to positive change.
So it's not just about writing a check or donating a bunch of stuff. It's about being engaged citizens who are genuinely committed to making a difference.
Precisely. And that gets to the heart of what Bad Aid is all about. Moving beyond that simplistic notion of charity and embracing a more nuanced, strategic approach to helping others.
It's about recognizing that good intentions aren't enough. We have a responsibility to be thoughtful, informed, and effective with our giving.
Exactly. And that message goes far beyond just disaster relief. You know, it applies to any kind of giving, whether we're supporting local charities, international development organizations, or just helping out our neighbors.
So for our listener, what are the key takeaways from our deep dive into Bad Aid? What do we hope they'll remember?
The most important thing is that every single one of us can be part of the solution. You don't have to be rich or an expert in international development to make a positive impact.
No, but we do have to be informed. We have to think critically and be strategic about how we give.
Absolutely. We need to get past that feel-good impulse to just give something and really engage our brains. Ask the tough questions.
Like, what are the real needs here? What are the most effective ways to meet those needs? How can I make sure what I do is actually going to help, not make things worse?
Those are the questions Bad Aid helps us to really wrestle with. It gives us the tools and knowledge to make better choices.
So before you donate anything, whether it's money, time, or stuff, take a step back and think about what you've learned from Bad Aid.
Research those organizations. Consider making a monetary donation instead of sending goods. Think about the long-term impact of your choices. But most importantly, ask yourself,
would this actually be helpful if I were in their shoes?
That's the ultimate test, putting ourselves in the shoes of those we're trying to help.
Because true compassion isn't just about feeling good. It's about doing good.
I love that. We've covered a lot of ground today, haven't we?
We have. But as always, there's still more to explore. And you mentioned you had one final thought-provoking point you wanted to leave our listeners with.
I do. We've spent a lot of time talking about the potential downsides of well-intentioned aid. But what about the other side of that coin? Have you ever considered the potential benefits of doing nothing?
Whoa. Okay, I did not see that coming. Are you suggesting that sometimes withholding aid could actually be the more ethical choice?
I'm not saying it's the answer, but it's something to think about. Bad Aid doesn't go too deep into this, but it's a topic that causes a lot of debate in the humanitarian world.
Yeah, I can see how that would be controversial. But it definitely raises some fascinating ethical dilemmas.
It does. It forces us to question our assumptions about helping others. Is it always our responsibility to step in? Or is there wisdom in letting communities find their own solutions?
Those are tough questions to wrestle with, for sure.
And that's exactly why they're worth thinking about. I encourage you to dig deeper into this debate, explore different perspectives, and reach your own conclusions.
Definitely a lot to ponder there. Well, on that thought-provoking note, I think we've reached the end of our deep dive into Bad Aid.
It's been a pleasure to share these ideas with you.
And to our listeners, we hope you found this exploration valuable. We encourage you to keep learning, to ask those challenging questions, and to approach giving with both your heart and your head.
Because ultimately, the goal is to make a real positive difference in the world.
This idea of holding back, even when we want to help, it's a lot to unpack.
It really is. It forces us to think about the power dynamics that always come into play with aid work. Even with the best intentions, we could be imposing our own ideas and solutions on others.
We might think we have all the answers, but we could be taking away people's power to help themselves, making them dependent on outside help.
Exactly. It's not just about what we give, but how we give it. Humility is key. Respect, too. And a genuine willingness to listen and learn from the communities we're trying to support.
So instead of rushing in to fix things, maybe we need to take a breath and ask, what would happen if we just stepped back?
Yeah, what if? What are the potential downsides of not acting? And conversely, what good might come from letting communities face their challenges head on and come up with their own solutions?
I imagine this gets particularly tricky when we're talking about disaster relief, right? Because when disaster strikes, people need help immediately.
It does. There's no easy formula for deciding the right course of action. You have to carefully assess each situation. What kind of crisis is it? How well equipped is the community to respond? All these factors play a role.
It's about finding that delicate balance between providing essential aid and respecting people's ability to help themselves and recover.
You got it. Sometimes the most compassionate thing we can do is take a step back, trust that those communities will find their own way forward.
It's a powerful message, one that makes us rethink how we approach helping others.
It is, but it's a conversation we need to have if we're serious about making a lasting, positive difference. So to our listeners out there, as you learn more about effective giving, keep this idea of thoughtful inaction in mind. Ask yourselves, could stepping back actually be the more helpful and respectful thing to do? It might feel counterintuitive, but sometimes the best way to help is to have faith in communities to find their own solutions. It's about empowering people, not fixing them.
That's a great point to end on. This has been a really fascinating deep dive into bad aid. Thanks for sharing your expertise with us today.
It's been a pleasure.
And to our listeners, thanks for joining us on this journey of exploration. We hope you found it insightful. We encourage you to keep learning, keep asking the tough questions, and to approach giving with both compassion and a critical mind. The goal, after all, is to make a real difference in the world. Thanks for being a part of the deep dive.